Hey, hey, everybody. This is Camille Macris here, your host of Paleo Love and Transformation. I have a couple announcements before we get today's show started. The first is that I would love for you to subscribe to the podcast, Paleo Love and Transformation, on iTunes. If you like what you're hearing, you can give us a nice rating and leave a review. I really love hearing what this podcast is doing for you. I got something last Friday that I wanted to share with you that really touched me. So much so that I reached out to this lovely woman, and she is now enrolled in our upcoming School of Inner Beauty. So it goes like this. This is from Jennifer in Colorado. She says, "Hi, Camille. I've been listening to your podcast every day while driving or at my desk. I just want to thank you for the amazing work you are doing. I feel like the poster child for everything you've been discussing. I have struggled with depression, low self-esteem, and an eating disorder for many years. This escalated the last couple of years since my husband got sick. He's the love of my life. We have 4 children, and most days I live in fear of losing him. I decided a year ago that I would do the work needed to get healthy mentally and physically. Every day is a journey, and I am learning so much. I made myself a promise that this is the year. No matter how long it takes, I will not give up. I'm going to push through and not fall back to food for comfort. My children don't need 2 sick parents. I have lived so many years in fear of not being enough that I haven't allowed myself to thrive. When I'm living in my masculine, which is only at work, I'm strong and very successful. It's a role I know how to play, and it comes with its own armor. But my true, authentic female is so lost and afraid. I think most women don't know how to live in the feminine. We have been told to be strong and to make as much or more money than the men do, all while looking good and running a perfect home. But we aren't men. We have hormones and feelings that are getting lost or viewed as weakness. We don't even lean on other women because we're afraid they'll think that we don't have our shit together. We aren't superheroes. We are women who need each other. Anyway, I could go on for days. Thank you. Thank you for being a place for women to go and feel connected. I know you're doing the work God intended. Hugs and kisses." Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for saying that. And that really just made my day getting that email from you. And I am really looking forward to what is going to unfold for you in upcoming beauty school. And then the last thing is, if you have not yet liked Paleo Love and Transformation on Facebook, you can head on over there. I like to post all of the new show episodes there, random thoughts and things and who's and what's it's, you know, all that good stuff. I also have a guide. It's like a Paleo Love and Transformation starter guide, and it is really super awesome. So you can head on over to the Facebook page and you can check that out there. So without further ado, let us get on to today's show.
Good afternoon, everybody. Camille here. I have a really super duper episode of Paleo Love and Transformation for you. What we're going to talk about today is going to blow your mind. So I hope you're ready. As you guys know, some of you, if you've been following along with me through my emails or some of my more personal blog posts, I have been on a very interesting journey this year, and a lot of it has to do with unraveling my fantasies about romantic relationship. So that's what we're going to be talking about with my special guest. My special guest is Axel W. Anderson III, as I'm reading on his Skype. It makes him sound very, very dignified. Axel and I met less than a month ago. Actually, right down the street, a friend of mine invited me to a Course in Miracles, just like a Wednesday night discussion. And I'd been thinking, you know, I think I might want to start doing some more Course in Miracles stuff. I had picked up the book about a decade ago, and it was confusing, and so I put it down, and I met Axel. Axel is a teacher of the Course in Miracles. He is a wacky dude. He teaches most of his deep spiritual lessons through pop culture / South Park references and music. So needless to say, I was a little bit blown away by this quirky, wonderful man. And the first night we talked, we got right into that deep and juicy conversation on relationships. And I said, Axel, we must record this. And so here we are. And now I give you Axel Anderson III.
Hi there, everyone. I think I couldn't say it any better. Camille just really, she just really gilded the lily a little bit. We don't do much self-promotion because everyone who's attracted to any of this is just sort of like she did, finds her way there. And if you found your way to Camille, then you found your way to me, and I found my way to the whole of all of our being. So like I was explaining to her, I said, I know a guy who knows a guy. And she's going, oh yeah, that's kind of really the way it works. You know, you get connected by knowing somebody who knows somebody. And so, here we go.
Yeah, so I suspect that most of our listeners today don't know a whole lot about what A Course in Miracles is. So let's just start right there. And then we can also, you know, say who that guy is who knows that guy. Maybe we should just tell him who that is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me start out a quick version of A Course in Miracles. I'll give you the quickest one. And this was something that happened in New York. And I usually teach through storytelling. And I'm sitting
He is a storyteller, people.
Oh, am I a storyteller? And I'm sitting with maybe seven people who have found their way to our table. That's kind of how it worked in New York. You'd start with two or three, and then everybody's listening over the corners of their table and just comes in. And I've got about seven New Yorkers, and they're looking at this 1,000-page book that is A Course in Miracles. And they're saying, like, well, can't you just shorten it for us, you know, give us a synopsis? And I'm floundering a little bit. So the guy, quote unquote, that I know, that I always speak with, I just call the Holy Spirit, which is the one mind. And so I asked the Holy Spirit, who can be quite a joker. And I said, how do I explain it to these guys? And he says, tell them this. And so this is the shortest version of A Course in Miracles you'll ever hear. Tell them this. This is A Course in Miracles for a New York minute. You take one thing seriously, you're dead. And then he spells it out, D-E-D-D, dead. And everybody got it immediately, like, oh, my God, this is a course in not taking anything seriously, okay? And that's really true. If you never took anything seriously again, you'd never have an unhappy moment in your entire life. You would be the happiest individual in imagination. And because you just get happier and happier unless you continuously keep going down into gravitas and into seriousness. So number one, and that, of course, applies across the board and especially in relationships. So I want to link everything at some point back to the central topic.
Yeah.
Because where does one take more things seriously than one does in intimate relationship?
Oh, heaven help me.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, really, so, heaven help me.
Yes, heaven help you, exactly. Thanks God. And so, so no matter where everyone sits with God, because I did not sit too well with God or Jesus, and yet Jesus is the author of A Course in Miracles. He spoke it to Columbia University psychotherapists in the School of Physicians and Surgeons, two non-believers, and they just wrote down the words that they heard, and this amazing Shakespearean text came out of it. It's a systematic...
It's dense.
It's dense. And yet, when you do the mind training, which is the central feature of the course, it is a training to allow you to use the universal thought system and apply, you know, sort of the higher, sane logic to everything that you're looking at, so that you can be the voice for peace, the model of sanity in a room full of crazy people, in a world full of crazy people. And so you can train your mind to think in the big picture and sort of take your part in this grand plan for the awakening of the entire, you know, civilization.
Sign me up.
I know. So that's sort of like the what A Course in Miracles does, how it works. You just submit yourself to the training. It's like 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the evening. It's really not hard, but it completely reworks your whole psyche to think, you know, heavenly thoughts, lovely thoughts, helpful thoughts.
Yeah.
And to act in a way that's for you, as opposed to in ways that have always been sabotaging and against you.
Yeah, awesome. I love it. So I want to get into this relationship discussion now that we've done a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to sum up, like in a nutshell, who I've been and what life has been like for me in relationship. And while I, of course, consider my heartache, my dilemmas to be very unique and very significant, of course. What I am learning, I might be a special rare bird, like especially delusional about relationship, but I must not be totally, because you and I had started to have this conversation the other night, and while I shared with you, it was like, you got it, you knew. So I must not be the only person who does these things, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Really, when people begin to trust you and sort of share what's going on behind the scenes, you're really starting to see you're looking at one relationship. Everybody's having the same relationship.
Oh, interesting. I don't know. Other people do not seem as dysfunctional as me, but that's okay.
I guarantee you that's much more likely the ego looking at what you're doing and just being highly critical. And if you really listen to other people, they're really telling you they're just as crazy as you.
Interesting. So let me tell you, either way, I'm gonna sort of paint a little bit of my picture.
Sure.
So I grew up in a home, my mom and my stepdad, who were, I mean, of course, doing the best that they could, but living out their relationship with their parents, which, you know, my mom was actually, like, I think sexually abused by her dad. My stepdad was an alcoholic, and he just had so many of his own issues with his own shame and rage. And so I don't, you know, most of my life, all I really remember from a young age was saying, I don't know how, but somehow I'm going to have a relationship, a marriage that's not anything like this. You know, I didn't say I won't get married, I'm going to be alone forever, but there was always something in me that said, I'm going to find a way to do it not this way, because this is not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I also had, from a very young age, probably thanks to Disney and others, this idea that I was really waiting for my perfect person, for my soulmate, for my knight in shining armor. And it was like, it was that fantasy that was actually one of my survival and coping mechanisms when I was like living in this tumultuous, broken, tense environment. I would lay in bed at night and I would dream about the man who was going to come and rescue me from this and give me love. And then, of course, you know, like many girls do, I had the teen heartthrobs, you know, I think it was Tom Cruise in the movie Cocktail. Oh, you're all into pop culture, so you'll love this.
Oh, yeah.
He was the first. And then I don't know if you remember New Kids on the Block.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, so New Kids on the Block, Jordan. But I had these intense infatuations with these guys. And posters, and it was like I would really live in those fantasies. And then, you know, I think I probably thought that I let go of those, but really what most of my relationships were like was, like, I would become infatuated with a guy. And sometimes we'd have a relationship and sometimes we wouldn't. But either way, he was on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was definitely going to give me the love that I'd always wanted and rescue me from the pits of my internal despair.
He was going to save you.
Oh, definitely going to save me.
Yeah.
And I fell in love. I fell really hardcore in love with this guy in my early 20s. And And we were sort of together, but we were both, I mean, we were getting drunk and we were, he was doing drugs and, but I was so in love with him, Axel. Oh my God. And I was convinced I loved him from the very first time I ever saw him. It was like heart beating out of my chest. And I actually traveled around the world to get away from him. That didn't work. I came back to Santa Barbara and still loved him for like 6 more years. That fantasy wasn't broken off until he got married to somebody else. And that's sort of embarrassing to admit, but like I was so stubborn and I just knew and I knew that I knew that I knew that he was it. And then after that, for like 7 or 8 years, I didn't date almost at all because I equated sex to heartbreak. And I said, I'm not going to have sex again until I'm married, but I was still definitely looking for my soulmate for sure. That guy who was going to like to cure it all. And I had my lists and I had my very clear idea. And so I met, you know, long story short, I met a couple guys since then who I felt that same like really strong, energetic, as soon as you meet him, like love at first sight, you must be the one pull. And it's like all reason goes out the window and it's just completely being taken away by I'm having this feeling. So this must mean this is the one I've been waiting for. And I'm simplifying it down a lot, but that was really the conversation running in the background, even though it wasn't like I necessarily distinguished it. But to get to where we begin to finally see a breakthrough in this was I had another one of these fated encounters at the beginning of this year. And I was a different person this year. You know, I had already done a lot of transformational stuff, a lot of spiritual development, but I was, I turned 33 and was like, okay, you know, I really am ready to have a relationship. I am not a little girl anymore. And I'm like, I'm ready to actually do this. And I meet somebody who by all intents and purposes was like knight in shining armor. I mean, really gorgeous, wanted the same things that I wanted. And I just was, and it was like this, again, I had no say in the matter. It was like, I was so swept away in it. And that relationship, it wasn't even ever romantic. It started and stopped very abruptly and, you know, really, really shocked me. But then I was finally awake enough to begin to see the pattern. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's where it actually got interesting was, wow, I've been doing the same thing for a really long time. And I have these ideas that this, and it's finally time to look behind, to look under the hood of this pattern that keeps showing up in my life. And, you know, what I've uncovered in the last, you know, this last year has been like nothing short of extraordinary. And so then when I met you, it was like, you know, a lot of the, I'd already put together a lot of these pieces, but that conversation that you and I had that night articulated it in a way that I'd never put words to before. I don't even remember what you said that night, but I remember my mouth dropping open being like, oh my God, wow, that's what I've been doing. And then the piece that was, even though I thought that my freakiness was totally unique to me, it must not be because you had a really clear handle on all of it. So that's my story. That's all I want to say. I know that you've heard a little bit of it and the listeners have heard a little bit of it, but I just got really, really committed and am really, really committed to busting up this illusion once and for all. And now I know that's not really once and for all, like it's something that's going to be with me forever. It's with us as part of our DNA, but to at least be really conscious of it.
Sure. Yeah, certainly.
Anyway, I'm done.
And
you talk.
what you say is more accurate, although I will say like to every fish that doesn't bite on a fish hook, there is another fish hook coming. There's another worm being dropped in the water every few minutes.
Stop it.
And so you're eventually just going to learn never to bite on any of those fish hooks, never to look at anything that's being dropped in front of you as truly what it appears to be. It is a trap. It is a test. It is a call for you to wake up and recognize that the very thing that you think you're going to get from someone else, you already have. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the attempt to get it from somebody else, the belief that you can get it from somebody else and that somebody else has something that you don't, is the ultimate illusion. So that's why you realize as a big fish, you're just not attracted to the bait whatsoever. It's a temptation to believe that you need something or somebody.
Wait, but you're saying that you can get to the place where you don't have any temptation?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, and the temptation is every time a fish hook is dropped in the water. That's a temptation. But any belief that somehow that's going to complete you, you certainly can. That literally is what A Course in Miracles is. It's an attempt to realize that you already have everything and are everything that you could possibly want from anyone else. So that when you see them, you're meeting them as an equal. You're meeting them as yourself. You're meeting them as the same. Mm-hmm. They are brothers and sisters always. They are friends always, because they are equals always. They don't have anything you don't have. They can't give you anything that you're missing, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no kind of sketchy little subtext woo-woo interplay where you're attempting to, you know, bring them into your field to get something from them, and you're giving them things in order to get something from them. All of that is a perverse angle on true love. Mm-hmm. And what you're looking for, and what everyone is looking for, is true love. And true love doesn't wax and wane. It doesn't come and go. It isn't given to the pretty ones and not the ugly ones and all this other kinds of malarkey, or to the deserving ones and the undeserving don't get it. It's really there for everyone. And so when you're not trying to locate it in one place, and that includes you and anyone else that you're associated with, you're not trying to hyper-focus that love will come from this person mm-hmm. to me. You're not going to get love from anyone, which is why what you said earlier, Camille, which is so telling, what everyone needs to recognize, and it's quite a part of A Course in Miracles, no one enters these kinds of relationships that isn't trying to solve their mommy and daddy stuff. Okay? Everybody is trying to get the love they never got as a kid. That this unconditional, universal, just there for you no matter what you do. They're trying to get that, and they didn't get it then, and they're not going to get it now. That's the fantasy of love, that love comes from another, that there's an external source for anything, and certainly for love. And everybody wants love. And the love comes from you. It's purely a gift. It comes from you, and you have the joy of giving it. And then if someone has an equal joy in giving love, they give it, and the two of you could easily go hand in hand together because you both enjoy giving love. And you'd be much more like twin stars than you would be like people in completing each other.
Mm.
And that is, if you want to call it a fantasy, if you want to call it an ideal rather than a fantasy, that's true love. True love is perfect equality. I'm literally looking at myself over there. I'm literally giving to myself because I'm giving of myself.
Well, that's quite beautiful. That is, I think that
it's good math. It's the perfect math. If it's not that, then it's unequal. The equation won't work out, and somebody will get less and somebody will get more, and there'll be a battle for supremacy as to who gets more and who gets less.
Yeah, and that was, I don't know if you remember, but that conversation we had, mm-hmm. It left me, my face, I felt so hopeless. It was like, okay, so everything that I have wanted, everything that I've been waiting for and hoping for is a fantasy. Even if I get it, it isn't going to make me happy, and it's all going to go away. You know, it's all been built on quicksand, so.
Yeah. We popped your bubbles.
Yeah, pop my bubbles. So then the next question, I don't know if you remember, I asked you was, you know, because honestly, I've been asking this question to a lot of people in the more, you know, in these spiritual communities, and, you know, a lot of these people are single and, you know, have broken out of this illusion of relationships and whatever. And And so I said, well, is there still hope of having a relationship of my dreams? Is there still hope of having this really amazing partnership with another? Because even though, you know, I've been taking a lot of time to collapse down the fantasies, I still have a hope and a desire to spend my life with somebody. Mm-hmm. And so where the heck does that all fit in? And what do great relationships that last, what do those actually look like?
Those are just incredibly beautiful questions. And I remember we kind of touched on a little bit of it. Yeah, we were more in the fantasy breaking, bubble popping phase of the, because until you do that, you're going to bring all these unrealistic, idealistic, Disney-esque expectations in, you know, find my one true love and we'll live happily ever after, my Prince Charming who will take care of all the things that I can't do and all these things. And so if you bring, you're laden with all these expectations and false beliefs, then of course you're going to be terminally disappointed. But the one key, you know, you mentioned something, you said, well, many of my friends who I talk about these things are single. You look at our language sometime. Okay. Mm. Because if you had to put me in a category, you know, like you fill in those boxes on the, like, married, divorced, single, et cetera,
call yourself single, would you?
I wouldn't call myself single in any way, shape, or form.
You're very polyamorous.
I'm surrounded, but I wouldn't call myself polyamorous in the context that people who are calling themselves polyamorous are intending it. It simply means that I'm surrounded by a community, many of whom are of the opposite sex, who just love the bejesus out of me, and I love the bejesus out of them, and we're able to be tactile, to be sensuous, to be, you know, to be physically in contact with each other, but we're just not coupling up and going off and making this, they're becoming quote unquote lovers, which is what I think people refer to when they say they're polyamorous, is they're just having multiple lovers. It means that we have the, like, 99% of what everyone gets in a love relationship, and we just aren't doing the sex thing in this moment. And that is phenomenal. And it would really have to be something extraordinary to break me out of that. Mm. Because we have everything else and no one feels left out and no one feels excluded and or preferred. And in that way, it kind of goes on and on and on. And it would really be something, like I said, that would be so obviously destined that it would... And in fact, I can't even imagine it. And I remember once saying to someone, and I think I told this to you, because when you actually just sort of go for a special relationship, an exclusive relationship, you have your model, you have your idea, you try to fit someone in it, and then you try to tell them, and I'm going to give you all my love. Mm-hmm. And you have this idea that they could actually receive all your love.
Wait, how did you know? How did you just took it all from my playbook?
I know. Believe me. I had the same playbook.
And oh, yeah, you're going to tell that story.
Yes.
Also when you're done saying this.
And if you could imagine that you had the amount of love that the sun has heat and light, and you were to say to someone, and I'm going to give you all of it, and then you saw them as this little burned, singed, little crispy critter that would have received all your love and just being annihilated by it, then you start to get the sense maybe that wouldn't be a kind or loving gesture. To try to give someone all your love and you just burn them up. It's just too much for one person.
Totally.
Right.
Yeah, I've definitely been there.
Yeah. So, and usually that's what happens is people go, that's too much. That's too idealistic. Mm-hmm. It's too unrealistic. And so they kind of cringe and back out. So that's number one, is the whole idea that I'm single if I'm not in a couple, and that being in a couple is sort of like the only opposite state. And there's this other state where, like I said, you have everything and you just might just not be doing the couple thing. Okay. That said, then is there a possibility of being in a couple ship that doesn't go down the road of, like, destroying each other or just turning each other off and making you run for the hills?
And even let me stop you for a second, because I want clarification on something else you said. You said it would have to be, for me to even get into a couple, it would have to be really destined.
Yes.
So do you believe that there is destiny when it comes to some people being together?
I do. I believe that if all the signs are pointing in that direction, and sometimes, again, people are brought into destined relationships where they're working with somebody or they're in close contact, or these people are in your family and you really just can't get rid of them. You know, it might be as much as you'd like to at times, you can't shake them off because you're related. So there are those destined relationships where you know you have to be together and you're going to have to work it out. And it's like all the doors are closed for you to get out of the relationship and all the doors are open for you to stay in. And you're sort of reading the signs. And so those are also, you know, anyone who's saying yes to the grand design, anyone who's saying yes to what perfect love wants to do with your life, it may end up in a relationship. And it's not necessarily a comfortable one, but in a relationship where you know we're completing part of the journey here, we're completing part of the destiny for everyone. And so don't even try to look around right now. We're going to do this thing.
Yeah. And you know, and that's so interesting because I do, that's sort of like the other side of, you know, these guys who have come into my life that I've had these, you know, really strong connections with. I really believe that we did have, you know, I know in my heart that we had agreements to be in each other's lives, and just how much I learned through those relationships at the time that they came in. And yeah. I wasn't necessarily consciously always learning, who knows, but I mean, I think you get what I'm saying. Like, we definitely, those were definitely 100% destined relationships.
Yes.
I thought they were destined for one thing.
That's right.
That they clearly were not destined for. That's right. And then we have lots of those all around us where
exactly
people like come into our lives for that.
Probably the only thing we can truly trust in this cockamamie, chaotic, tumbling, you know, world is timing. In other words, if this person is in my life right now, if they're in my face right now, if I can't seem to get around them, this is for something way bigger than, you know, just my personal satisfaction. But it's also here for my liberation, for my freedom. In other words, this is part of these are my stepping stones. These are my breadcrumbs. These are people that if I can learn to come into union and peace with this individual, if I can learn to forgive and or release things from my past that keep bringing me into close contact with this type of individual or whatever, I'll start moving in a whole other arc and a whole other direction. So I really need to pay some attention to who's in front of me and go with it.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point because it's really easy to get into like a total victim mode about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me in the relationship I was telling you about from earlier this year, you know, like my friends or people around me, like they were pitying me, you know, oh my gosh, Camille, we're so sorry this happened. How did this happen? Oh, we feel so bad for you and da 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 da, whatever. Mm. And certainly there was a period of time where I took that, but not really. I did have a special grace to be able to, I think because I'd already done so much work to that point, that once the initial shock of his disappearance happened, I chose to dive into the lesson as opposed to get away.
Exactly.
Because it was like, I cannot keep repeating this pattern. And it has shown up now enough times that it's definitely there for me to transform. And if I don't do it now, it's just going to keep coming back. So I may as well do that. And it was like, if I didn't get bigger, it was going to destroy me.
Yeah, certainly.
And well, it caused huge growth.
Nothing will destroy you more than hopelessness.
Mm.
That's the ultimate goal. And again, I'm coming back to why I teach A Course in Miracles and why the Course in Miracles in and of itself gives you such an insight into your own ego's function, which is to keep you separate from everything and everyone. Mm-hmm. Thus separate from God, from perfect love forever. And its role is just to be separate. And nothing can keep you more separate than being unwilling to try to form a union, to come together. So eventually you just give up and you go home and you die alone with your cats. And 3 weeks later, they find you because of the smell. You know, you're like hopeless.
What a beautiful image.
Well, you know, it happened. I'm from New York when all this would go on, and maybe 4, 5, 6, 8 times a year, you'd read that in the paper where some poor soul, no one bothered to come and check on them. They didn't have anyone in their lives, and they finally, the firemen had to break down the door. And it's sort of like what everyone is afraid of is their ultimate destiny, feeling already alone in the universe. So therefore, I need someone. And I need them just to feel not alone, because ultimately that could easily be my end. And that's tragic. But nonetheless, I think a lot of people put up with a lot of stuff just so they don't die alone.
Yeah.
You know, so it goes all the way from that, just in the fact that they put up with a lot of stuff just so they don't live alone. Yeah. Because they're terrified of what that implies.
Yeah. So. And the illusion that, like, there's several illusions there. One, that you could ever be alone, really. And two, sort of on the other side, that there is something so incomplete and broken about you that even a terrible relationship is better than no relationship.
Absolutely. The things that you'll put up with just to have somebody next to you. And that's kind of what, to go back to again, what's the central motive for almost everyone, and especially for people who say they're spiritual seekers, is as much as they feel like they're looking for union with everything and being, you know, connected to everything, they have this side journey, this eddy, like in the river where you go off on the side and you just got to twirl around with the dead leaves and the garbage and you don't go down the stream, that takes them into, look, still, I'm still looking for somebody to go with me. And it's like they're antithetical. You'll find somebody to go with you, because you'll find many bodies to go with you in the middle of the river. Like if you're shooting down to the ocean in the main stream, there'll be plenty of others with you. But when you're looking for someone special, you're going to go off to the side and you're going to leave, you're going to leave the mainstream. And that's kind of a picture of what slow time is and what wasting time is. It's just going off and spinning around, trying to get something that you already have, trying to get something from someone else.
Yeah.
Denying that you already have it. Being in the mainstream, there's so much joy with everyone moving in the same direction, singing the same song, going the same way. You know, it's so frictionless, it's so effortless, that you'll easily find some cute fella or some cute girl in that crowd, you know, of people all joyfully going to the ocean.
Well, that sounds nice.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
It sounds hopeful.
Yeah.
Right? Well, you might want to get back in the river then. Try it again. Only this time, don't get distracted by a cute pair of googly eyes, or focus just on you. That's the last temptation of Christ.
Yeah.
To find somebody.
Yeah. So tell us, you tell us your story.
Oh, sure. Yeah. As an individual, I was about 55 years of age when it dawned on me that my 12-year relationship was the door in the floor, that I had broken up with this woman maybe 20 times, and as comical as it sounds, we were in our third house together. We had actually had to either sell or break leases on houses because we couldn't stand to be with each other after about 6 months after the honeymoon phase would be over.
You thought a new house would give you a new honeymoon?
Yeah, when we had a new start and we'd fall in love and we'd say, this time we're going to make it, and this time we've learned and we've excluded all these other things. And, so there was this sense that somehow we were supposed to be together. And then about 6 months later, we'd realize, no, we're still the same people and we can't stand to be with each other. And I was explaining to you, Camille, that we were sleeping on a king-size bed as far away from each other as we can be, like facing back to back, and just being like, sleeping with the enemy is the way I described it.
Why couldn't you let it go?
Couldn't let it go. For some reason, it just was, and of course it was like an addiction, because it sort of had all the elements that you'd get high for a while, and then you'd realize, boy, this isn't working at all. But now you're stuck, and so, because when you buy a house, you can't just walk away from the house. It's easier to get a divorce than it is to sell a house, because you got to have a buyer for the house. You can divorce, you can just give it away. So, In our context, I was at my wit's end. I had everything else in my life was going great, But I was so depressed, I couldn't even walk down the hall without shuffling my feet. I felt like I was a dead man walking. And I remember one night, because I'd had A Course in Miracles on my bookshelf for 10 years, but it had all these Jesus words in it, and I was like a recovering Catholic. I was like, Jesus words. You know, it's probably a Christian thing, and I don't even want to get into it. So I'm on my knees that night, and I'm just crying out, and I'm asking for help. And I'm saying, I'll even do anything. I'll even do Jesus if it gets me out of this muck and this rut and this mess. And then I go into my friend's office the next day, and he is not a spiritual guy, and he and I have never exchanged a spiritual word. And I'm telling him my story, and he says, well, I do A Course in Miracles. And I'm blown away, because he doesn't seem like that kind of person at all. And he tells me a story, which is one of the most remarkable stories of forgiveness I've ever heard, and complete forgiveness and liberation and release from having been really wronged by someone. His fiance slept with like 10 of his male friends. She's a sex addict. And he was going to kill her, and somebody said, don't, and brought him A Course in Miracles, and he read it, and he forgave her. And so I said, oh, my God, I got to go home and read this book immediately. I have it on my shelves. And I went home, and that began a process that within the next 2 or 3 months, we had actually completed our work, done our work, and we never saw each other again. And I was one happy camper. And she was wherever she is. She's doing what she needs to do. But I was free. I had broken the spell. And I
wait, but wasn't there a next temptation?
Oh, my God. You're ready for the next temptation? the next temptation of Christ? Sure.
You had broken the spell
I had broken the spell. Well, no. And then I swore off, which I highly recommend. Never do that. That's why when you were saying, and you know, I'm over it, or will there not be another temptation? I say, yeah, of course, there'll be lots of temptations. Whether you go for them will be up to you. But I swore off, and I said, that's it for me. And then within 2 weeks, I meet this person who we have literally electricity shooting out of our hands to each other. We're actually making sparks, which I had never experienced before. 6 days later, I'm flying out to Colorado to meet her family. We're all in love with each other. The family is in love with me. I'm in love with them. I come home, and we're in a spiritual community, and people who normally sort of poo-poo, you know, these special, like, googly-eyed, holding hands kind of relationships, were all just, oh, my God, you're the best couple in the world. And we go out in the woods, and little deer would come up to us and just look at us, just, you know, and little white rabbits would come and sit at our feet. And I was saying,
part of my fantasy.
It's your
too.
Disney fantasy, exactly. Yes. And the only thing we were missing were the bluebirds and the garlands of flowers, and we would have been totally recognizing we were in a Disney movie. It lasted exactly 1 month, and she came to me one day after I'd seen her sort of flirting with this guy, this opera singer guy, Malcolm. And so,
Newman.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw her, and I, you know, kind of thought, hey, something's funny. The next day she comes to me and just tells me, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. It's like I'm your girlfriend or something. And I'm going, I thought you were my girl. I feel so misled. And I'm crying in her arms, and she's crying, I'm so sorry. And yet at the moment that I'm crying in her arms and recognizing that, I feel so misled, I also remember asking for this. That's why when you were saying these lessons that you learned are your greatest boons, and sure, you had to take them like, you know, kicks in the shins and knocks on the head, but that's the way you chose to learn. Mm-hmm. And now you've decided to do better and learn it easier, more easily.
So.
Oh, I believe that you have. But in those days, and that was it for me. And I realized I asked for this. I asked for the big kahuna. I asked for the prize. I wanted to actually be free of illusion. And so I thought it was fine. And so I left, and I was like, I'm a little heartbroken, but I also realized I signed up for this. The next day I found out she was actually with this guy, and he was in her bed, you know, and the way she said it, I was like, oh my God. I asked her, I said, so what is your relationship with him? And she said, all I can say is we're totally in love. Now, this is, you have to understand, is like 3 days after, you know, we were totally in love. Mm. So I'm just crucified. And I, the next day, because we were in kind of a telepathic community, really no one had to gossip. Everyone just knew something had happened to me. And I walked around, and people would ask me, like, how are you doing? And I didn't have an answer. There was literally no one in my body whatsoever. I was what death must feel like, to just be a hollow man. And so I went to bed that night, and at about midnight, at about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and 6 o'clock, right on the hour, I'd have all these burning questions. I'd wake up and I'd open up A Course in Miracles, and there within those two paragraphs was the answer to those questions about how I was trying to love unlike God, how I was trying to love in a little context, how I was using this relationship to, you know, literally take me out of the whole, you know, big picture and try to make, again, give one person all my love and try to get all that person's love for myself. And et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, the point is by 6 o'clock in the morning, I couldn't wait to see him. I was like Ebenezer Scrooge on Christmas morning. I just wanted to go, oh my God, God bless us one and all. I wanted to go shower them with affection and thank them for the thing that they had been willing to do for me, which is to, you know, kick my butt. And so I couldn't find them. And at some point I did see them, but I just raised my arms to them like, thank you, but they didn't see it. I came back later. And there was no one in the building except these two people, and they were locked into what I could see was the most beautiful entrainment, holy instant I've ever seen, where two people were actually one. Mm-hmm. And I looked at them, and as they came into the room, they both looked at me like, are you okay? And I was just weeping in her arms saying, thank you so much for what you did for me. And I didn't know him so well. He kind of gave me that look like, do you think I stole your girlfriend? I was like, ooh, dude, come here. And I was holding him and doing the same thing, just thanking him for everything he was willing to do for me, whether they knew it or not.
Yeah.
They had saved my life.
Yeah.
And as I walked out to the car, I heard in the sky, the first time I've ever heard spirit speaking to me from the sky instead of between my ears, and the voice said, you are a vast, capacious being. You have no limits whatsoever, because I had converted like a broken heart in 3 days.
Yeah.
And I said, bring it on. And that was virtually 5 weeks to the day before I was in New York on September 11th. So I got to convert bigger and bigger crises and bigger disasters than my little broken heart. And it was a springboard to that. It was a springboard to being a quantum healer, a cosmic healer, and a planetary healer. So those relationships that have all the material in it, all your disaster, your diabolical loss of self-worth, are the ones that save you. They're the ones that free you, because if you'll really recognize your bulletproof heart in the moment that you recognize you really weren't hurt at all. You were freed. You were liberated from the little picture of love.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I know. That's why I can speak, because I really don't, you know, there's no advice for how to do a relationship other than to look at the same one and do whatever they're doing. And you can tell the same one because they're not tumbling and screaming and flailing around. They're usually quiet while you're doing that. And other than that, there's probably no, you know, playbook for a relationship. But I can tell you and most of the teaching that I do on relationship, I can tell you each and everything not to do. Each and everything not to invest with belief. Each and everything not to try to manipulate and or get, because you're going to find out that you're going to get the opposite of what you thought you were going to get.
Yeah.
So those are the markers, et cetera. Like, if you just don't do that, you'll probably have a really good relationship.
And so tell me a little more about, like, I want a picture of, because we're talking a little bit abstractly right now.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a picture of the relationships that you've seen, and like, get on the court with it. Some relationships that you've seen that really work and why they work.
Absolutely. And these are relationships that I've had since, and there's also ones that I've been aware of. And first of all, they have had a similar belief system, because I think if you have a belief system that's just, you know, sort of combative and dual and conflictual, and you believe that somehow relationships need to be worked on and discussed endlessly and negotiated, then you're already doomed. You're going to just do that until you get tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you usually leave the person. So I would say the relationships that have worked are ones that are not based on getting something from someone else. They're based on like unlimited amounts of freedom. Like, the people have been able to go you know, sometimes 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 months, just go wherever they need to go, go to other countries, and they come back, and it's like no time has passed. And the other person, of course, is also free to go and move about the ship. So they have this wide open sense about them. It's not about like we're just going to go get in, move into our little cottage with our white picket fence and the whole bit. Not that.
And cut ourselves off from
everything.
Love and connection with other people.
Exactly. Exactly. Because in other words, if a relationship with yourself is based on total giving, both to yourself and to everyone, like is maximally, then the health of the relationship is to be able to continue giving. And so wherever you need to go and give your gift, that's where you go. And whether you go as a couple and go on the road together or travel together, or whether sometimes you go in different directions, it really doesn't matter, because the belief and the timelessness, I go abstract again only because these are core beliefs. Like if you believe that your relationship with somebody terminates when they die, you're going to lose everyone that you love. If you don't believe that it has a limit that ends with their death, you're going to still stay in relationship with people who have passed into another place. Mm-hmm. If you believe that it's related on being in the same zip code or being in the same room, then you're going to limit what love is, and you're not going to recognize that love transcends all of those boundaries, and that it's vital, and there's contact in many different ways, but you're going to limit it to a Skype or a phone call or something, then you're just going to limit communication. And that's your little idea of love, and it's going to come back and kick you and hurt you, and it's going to damage the relationship, because then it's going to have to mean you're going to have to keep bringing this person into your little sphere. So the ones that I've seen that work have that sense of expansiveness, and it's giving that. It's more about what I get to give when I'm with you, and of course you're willing to receive, and me being willing to receive of you. I think it's also based, again, on that sense of whoever is the most sane runs the relationship for that period of time, and where the other person can then go into fear and go into loathing and go into doubt or go wherever their subterranean emotions are taking them. And then they can express that, and the other person, of course, is agreed not to be judgmental and not to be hostile to it, and just kind of like recognize people go crazy, and that tomorrow that's going to be you.
Yeah.
And they're going to be the ones holding the fort for perfect love. And that's doable, because I've seen it done. And it isn't being done in some kind of therapeutic, you know, language. It's just, as soon as someone starts to get crazy around me, I get really calm. I always say to people, I just go all Gandhi on their ass. You know, like if you're hurling thunderbolts at me, I'm just going to be even more peaceful. And because that's what's needed, that's a call for love, and I'm going to respond. And so, and that really helps, because then the person isn't afraid that they've, you know, crossed the Rubicon, that they've made a critical error and that they're not going to be able to undo it. So I'd really take it as nothing, like it never happened. It didn't hurt me, because I wasn't willing to be hurt by it. I wasn't going to play small and weak and feel like, and so again, that sounds like abstract, but the people who have agreed to do it recognize that it's really tangible. These are tangible behaviors. Wouldn't it be nice if you'd be like the mother when the child is having the fit, you know, and the child is saying, I hate you and I never want to talk to you again. And the mother's like, yeah, right. You'll be back at dinner. You know, you won't even make it 3 hours before you want to see me again, because I'm feed you, you know, like I don't take that seriously. And I don't take it personally. And wouldn't you like to be able to have that same kind of mother love to yourself and to your partner when they're going ape?
Yeah, that's really one of the things that I see in the relationships that work. I think, mm-hmm. I think everything you're saying, I really love. Just the having, that's always been a big thing for me, is, you know, the wondering of, because I need a lot of freedom, you know, mm-hmm. I need freedom to do and be and to express myself. And so I've always been attracted to people who also seem to crave freedom, mm-hmm. who don't seem like they are going to suffocate me.
Yeah.
So, and just that allowing and the freedom to
It's always been so weird to me to like to have to shut your love off from other people when you find somebody who you want to love. Absolutely. Or like shutting off your relationships with other men. My best friend for the last 12 years is a man. What, mm-hmm. am I going to stop being his friend because I am in a romantic relationship? That would be, that doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't make, it's not good math.
No, right? It's really not good math. And, but then also what I love what you're saying just about the allowing of, and not taking things so personally. I know that's something that is a constant development for me. But like I used to take anytime anybody was in a bad mood, oh, they must be mad at me. There must be something. I must Absolutely. Have done something wrong. And I don't do that so much anymore. I'm sure that will be tested again in romantic relationship. But, you know, like getting that it's not really about you and mm-hmm. having the real space and allowance for the person that you love to be able to go through whatever they're going through.
Yeah.
And to not attach on to it.
They haven't wounded you because they're going through what they're going through.
Right. Or that you can't be happy unless they're happy.
Absolutely.
I've definitely felt that in past relationships. Like if he was struggling, then I was struggling.
Well, I want to interject really quickly on this, that's part of the premising. In other words, most romantic relationships, most coupleships are premised on you make me happy, or I'm happiest when I'm with you, or happiness when I really experience a lot of happiness when I'm with you. So mm-hmm. that somehow I'm outsourcing that happiness. Well, of course, then when it turns a little sour or people get into their stuff, then now you're making me unhappy or you're scaring right. me, etc. As if what you're doing affects my mood state at all.
Right.
Because I gave you that power to do it, because I attributed my happiness as coming from you and or the relationship. And it doesn't. My happiness comes from me. It's actually the first marriage, Camille, mm-hmm. is you marry your own happiness. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't trade your happiness for some dude. You wouldn't trade your happiness for some girl. You wouldn't trade your happiness for anything or anyone in the world, because your onboard happiness is what guarantees you'll be happy in any circumstance, with or without someone. And that allows the people in your life to come and go freely. And your happiness is not riding on that decisions that they make.
Totally. So what's the point then? Why even bother getting into a romantic relationship?
Well, first of all, as you've seen, you learn all your lessons because it's Mortal Kombat. Number one, you have entered the gladiatorial arena of your self-esteem. Your whole self-worth is on the line. And if somebody could rip your heart out with a look, you really want to go there. You really want to discharge that ability. Because it's always going to be there, because it's going to remind you of when your mother and or your father disapproved of you and you felt like you were just a worthless piece of crap, you know, because you weren't pleasing them and you were looking for that approval in their eyes. And until you disconnect that, like your worth is being rising or falling based on what you do and how you're being perceived, you're going to keep doing relationships that remind you of paternal and maternal relationships. You're going to do your mommy daddy stuff.
Oh,
so you got to learn, you got to break out, you got to break free.
And these relationships really, they're the going through the fire, the coal.
Yeah.
I can't think of what it is, but it's so remarkable to me, like with this, you know, this last guy that I was telling you about was, you know, when I actually calculated how much time we spent together in the same physical space, it was like less than 10 hours. It could have even been less than 6 hours over a couple month period. And it was like, wow, that's the gift that keeps on giving
for
7 months after that.
And exactly. You can obsess about someone and have imaginary conversations with them and endure in the whole fantasy that they're still somehow in your life for months and months and months over virtually over some a smile that somebody gave.
Totally. Yeah. and but just how I think you really got it with just the, you know, that relationships, you know, and I think you really have to hold it in that way. Like if you're really interested
in discovering the very best version of yourself and being the biggest contribution you can be in this world, then you will surrender to those divine relationships that may not always be so comfortable, but that are honing and refining you to be your best self.
That's right. They're loaded with lessons.
They're
charged with that much material. Until you discharge it, you really have no business, because you'll just simply go and get another placeholder to put in that same spot anyway. You have no reason to leave this one until you can leave clean.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's just going to come back in another form.
I
was reading some article. I did another podcast called Daddy Issues on this last month. But it was basically that, sort of like that premise. It's this like psychological term that basically says that, especially like if you had hard childhoods like so many of us did, that you will go around finding somebody who has the very worst characteristics of a parent.
Yes, exactly.
And so like for me, I had, you know, I never met my biological father, and my stepdad was, you know, totally emotionally unavailable. And then when my biological dad learned about me, well, he always knew about me, but when there was an opportunity for him to contact me, he chose not to contact me. And so there was this flavor of abandonment, that I had always been abandoned. And I never felt consciously abandoned, but I knew that it must be there, because I kept attracting into my life men who left and men who were just unavailable. Either they were in other relationships or they were emotionally unavailable. And when I – and then so basically this whole – whatever the psychological term was that – so we will bring in people with these characteristics, hoping that we can somehow change it.
That's right, that you can get a different outcome.
That I can get, because so yeah. that will go back and reconcile all of the pain caused by that parent.
Which it will never will, and that's futility, and it's exactly how the ego manages to get you hopeless, is because that's the one place you're never going to find unconditional love, especially when you've chosen somebody who's incapable of it.
Yeah.
So that's why our fingerprints are the only ones ever on the crime scene. We picked with, you know, acute detail the very person who's never going to give us what we're looking for. And hallelujah. Because yeah. If the thought was that we could, and I mean, or it bore out that we actually got what we were looking for, we'd never realize it was in us, it was within us all along, and it was never out there.
Wow.
We would come under the illusion that it was outsourced and that we just found the perfect one to give us the love we never got as a child. And that would never solve the problem that we still feel disconnected with everything and everyone, because we feel we're separate from eternal, unconditional love.
Yeah.
With God.
And it is amazing, though, just to, the last thing I wanted to say about that, whatever that theory was that you will continue to go after the ego will continue to go after that model in relationship, yep. Hoping that if I, like, for me, it was like my story was, if I am just this, then he'll come back. If I'm just this great, if I'm just this perfect, if yep. I just whatever, he'll come back. And if this one that I've been pining over comes back, then that is going to heal every wound from my childhood and blah, blah, blah. And when I saw that, it was like, it was so freeing, and it yeah. also was a knife in the center of my heart that had been this driving force in me for so many years.
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. And then to like take it though that next step further, that if you subscribe to the belief like I do that we choose our parents – and we make these agreements and contracts with people before we even come into this world, that we have these very specific things that we need to learn. And if you take it that way, then it's like, wow.
That's right.
It is such a blessing that my biological dad never wanted to talk to me, and that my stepdad was this, that, and the other. And actually, I saw my stepdad last month, and he was in the hospital, and it was a really crazy experience. But I was able – and I'd already forgiven him years ago, but I was able to be so thankful in a way I'd never been for him, that he couldn't give me the love that I always wanted.
Yeah.
Because, but, like you said, because it is in me, because it is me and God, because it's always going to be that. And so I have a real profound gratitude that
I never were under the illusion that it was from any other source, that you could get it from a parent or a lover. And you managed to like prove it to yourself. You weren't going to ever get it from a parent or a lover.
Yeah.
That the love you were looking for could only be given to you by yourself. Mm-hmm. And it was a factor of God's love, which is universal, unconditional, and massive. It's just huge and could never be contained in any little family relationship or any little boy-girl relationship of any kind. I don't care how quote-unquote great you want to play it up and magnify it poetically. It's just way bigger than anything. There were no words to mm-hmm. describe it. And so the beauty of that, I remembered a quote from Carolyn Mace where she said, your family, your tribe, agreed to love you incompletely so you would leave. Part of the denial of this sort of the love that would so-called fulfill you or keep you safe and happy was the mystic's journey, that anyone who was ever going to seek a higher truth and a happier truth than just human happiness was going to have to leave their home and was going to have to leave their village and was going to have to go searching in where mystics go to search. Mm-hmm. And that means they were going to learn some hard lessons. They were going to go through the door and mark certain death a number of times, and come out bulletproof and transcendently alive. Mm-hmm. But your family played a key part in that, because you were never going to believe that if you just went home and were a good girl, you were ever going to get that love. So that said, you've been on this journey, and every single failed relationship, if you allow or take it, every single abandonment, every single betrayal, every single attack by somebody trying to tell you what you need to do so they would love you, will actually take you to the separation between you and eternal creative reality, God. And so rather than limiting it to how can I fix this between me and him or her, you just take it straight to, is this true? And looking and holding this up into the light, is this real? Is my worth being determined by this person's approval or disapproval? No, of course not. Is it established in my creation? Is it established as who I am? What I'm made of? I'm made of God. I am an angel, and I'm not a muggle. I'm not a human. I'm not a meat suit. And so holding up this belief in myself that my worth is in play and to be determined by who is approving or disapproving of me is the most liberating thing you can ever do. Because if you give it back to God, to eternal love is going to show you you're eternally loved, and you could never change it or lose it in any way. And now you're worth is no longer being established by the people in front of you.
And then from there, then the beautiful paradox of that is then you begin to have that space and that freedom to have love with people in your life that is so much more fulfilling.
That's right.
And in romantic relationship and otherwise. And it's a really amazing. It's amazing how that works.
it's amazing because it's all based on what you give and has nothing to do with what you get. Mm-hmm. See, because to be a gift, it can't even take awareness of what might be coming back. It's not an exchange, because any exchange is fraught with the possibility that you're going to try to bargain. So you're going to try to get more security than the security you give. You're going to try to get more satisfaction than the satisfaction that you give. Mm-hmm. A lover simply loves originally. They give maximum security. They give maximum satisfaction. They give maximum affection and attention or whatever. They just give it away. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, they're not trying to measure what's coming back. There's no bargaining. There's no exchange. And any two who can do that make an ideal pair, but not because it's a business deal, not because it's a bargain.
Yeah,
it's because they can both give and receive maximally, and that's what you want.
Yeah.
And they're out there. Anyone who's listening to this, they're out there. We're out here. we're giving and receiving maximally because we don't do it. It's not about a personal love. It's not about what I get at all. I'm full. And if you give from your fullness, you'll always be surrounded by lovers.
Oh my gosh, what a wonderful, beautiful conversation.
I think so.
I think it's time for us to say farewell.
All right.
But I would love to have you back on.
Oh yes,
if you would like that. Oh, actually, yeah. And I'm gonna post the question right now to the listeners. Axel also has some amazing stories of healing, like Jesus, biblical Jesus healing.
Bible story level.
Bible stories. And we stayed up really late one night just listening to his stories. And I thought that it would be really fun to tell some of his stories. So we're going to be sharing some of those stories. We're going to be testifying to the power of the Holy Spirit.
Thank you, Jesus.
Thank you, Jesus. and I would love to hear from you just after listening to Axel and what he brings to the table with Course in Miracles. Maybe if you are already a student of Course in Miracles and there is another topic that, I mean, you don't need to be a student for that, but if there's another topic that you think would be really great for us to like really dive into, I'll bet he would be happy to come back on and talk about that. Cause it's fun.
It is fun.
And we get to share the love. Oh, and P.S. How can people, you do coaching. You do private spiritual coaching.
I do.
So are you taking on new people? Do you see people outside of just San Diego, or how do you do that?
You know, it's really to be given, to be announced. I don't really have a method to it. And it tends to be the people that have already engaged in some kind of awakening process and that I've been familiar with either. And then they tend to want to sign on for like a bigger, wider, higher experience. Mm-hmm. And we go together because it's not really something I'm doing for anyone. I'm just being willing to hold that space so we can both wake up faster. And so people can maybe, if they want to, contact me through you or, and just let's just see if there's anything or anyone out there that might want to do that.
Okay.
Otherwise, we'll make it more, more accessible or something like that. It's just, I just really don't do this as a business. I just do it because it's what we do. We blow shit up. We don't let any illusions sit uncontested. We go right at it and we break up blocks that people have because, love wants you home.
I have to say this one last thing about the night before I met you. So the night before I met Axel, everybody, I'm not on my knees very much, but I was actually on my knees in front of, I have this little altar and a cross and just my little holy space and just praying, saying, God, deliver me of my insanity. Deliver me of continuing to have these thoughts about this person and deliver me of all of my humanity. And I need more of you. And I don't know really even what I said didn't really matter, but I was just in a place of surrender. And the next day I met Axel. So there you go.
It sounds exactly like my experience.
I know. That's why I had to say
exactly.
It.
Right. You're going to meet somebody. You're going to meet a man in the road. You're going to meet a man, unexpectedly. And I say a man, could be a woman, but you're going to meet someone who is going to change your life forever. And because you asked, you said, I really need to break out of this pattern to get off the not so merry-go-round. So, and you're going to need help. So you're going to meet someone and then the two of you are going to engage in a complete life transformation and go in the exact opposite way.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, I'm so thankful for this conversation. I think that it is going, not I think, I know it is going to unlock something new for anybody who chooses to listen to it. So thank you. And we'll be talking again soon.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. I love you, Camille. Thank
you.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Bye, everybody. Bye.